Ladies and gentlemen, we are live, as this is the moment you've all been waiting for.
Network MMA Weekly Podcast. I am Austin, one half of the MMA Weekly Podcast, Austin Chef Dan, and I want to do this video today to talk about what happened this past weekend of UFC 290 and a little preview of this upcoming card, not pay-per-view, of course, but just regular card on ESPN, I believe, or ESPN Plus, between Holly Holm and Bueno Silva. And let's get started. Let me just get a ticket ready and everything, and we'll go from there. Don't forget the thumbs up button. Don't forget to comment. Let us know your thoughts on this card, etc. Appreciate the support you guys give us, and let's get started. We'll start with the main event between Yair Rodriguez and Alexander Volkanovski. Alexander Volkanovski gets a TKO victory in round 3, 4 minutes and 14 seconds in the third round. And yeah, Volkanovski, man, what else can I say that hasn't been said about this dude? This dude is special. This dude is my opinion. He deserves to be pound for pound number one with John Jones. I know the UFC rankings had both of them tied, and it's the right call in my opinion, because John Jones, you cannot ignore what actually, you know what? Hang on. No. Volkanovski should be number one over John Jones. I know John Jones just beat Zeragon, the heavyweight champ. He technically never lost, but anyone who actually saw his fights and knows the rules knows that he lost to Dominic Reyes. Clearly lost the first three rounds and lost that fight. And since then, he only had one fight since then. That was that victory over Zeragon back in March for the heavyweight title. Volkanovski, even though I've always said he lost the second Holloway fight, but since then, he's beaten Ortega, Zombie, destroy Holloway in the third fight, and in my opinion, beat Islam Makhachev. Especially, I mean, that fourth round, it's kind of hard for me to give that fourth round to Islam. So he did nothing with the takedown and holding his back, but that's another story for another day. And then we did the Yair Rodriguez. Volkanovski, to me, is clearly the pound-for-pound number one fighter. To me, it's not even debate. This guy is the greatest featherweight of all time, to me. I know although Holloway had their runs, but he beat both of them. He's been on a crazy run. The guy's never lost a featherweight. And it's just like he's just so well-rounded. I mean, He in this fight, he took Yair down and just knew he had an advantage in the ground game against Yair. Didn't stand too much with him the first two rounds. Took him down and did decent work on the ground. Very good work against Yair. And you know, Yair had no business, basically didn't have a lot of answers for that. It was a callback, I guess, to when Frankie Edgar fought Yair. But Frankie Edgar just took Yair down, just dominated him, controlled him to the point where I think that fight had ended with a doctor stoppage. Although Yair's improved since that fight, considering that Frankie Edgar fight was back in 2017 when Yair was much younger. Yair has gone better since then, but Volkanovski was able to basically do what Frankie did against Yair back in the day, but did it in a different way also. Gets a better version of Yair Rodriguez too, might I add. Take him down, do good work on the ground, and then the third round, you know, the fight was standing, and Yair did land some good shots in Volkanovski. Volkanovski was like acknowledging, "Yeah, that guy, I mean, yeah, it was good," but Volk kept hitting him back, and then supposedly there was a head clash. I'm trying to remember. Someone said there was a head clash in the third round, which I'm trying to remember. I can't remember it. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it might have happened. But even then, Volkanovski was winning the fight. Volkanovski was doing well in stand-up, too, despite Yair having some success there in that third round. Volk was doing well. It was in the stand-up. He hit Yair with a counter right, I believe, or a counter left that hurt Yair. And then he just started picking him apart. and then hit him with a nice body shot, which Pepe overlooked. That nice body shot he landed on Yair, which left an open to getting hit again, which he got dropped and ended up getting finished. And it was just, what a performance by Alexander Volkanovski. This guy, best fighter in the world, pound for pound number one. To me, he beat Islam. This guy, to me, is the double champ. This guy is unbelievable. Volkanovski, what more can you say about this dude? This guy's a Hall of Famer, one of the all-time great fighters in MMA history. And he is getting better, but he's just so above these guys. His fight IQ, the way he fights, it's just like, man, he's up here. Everyone else is like here. Like, everyone else is here. Holloway is here. Volk is here. And for those who listen to audio podcasts, I'm just explaining, like, you know, showing Volkanovski at the top, Holloway in the middle, and then the rest in the bottom, if that makes sense. Not that the rest of the featherweight division is trash. They're not. They're good. They're great fighters. I mean, yeah, Yair's a great fighter. Ortega's very good. Very great fighter. Zombie's pretty good. I know Zombie got dominated. He's older, but Zombie's still pretty good. I know. Plus, Holloway's Holloway. But, yeah, great performance. I mean, my goodness, man. Well, next for Volkanovski, he obviously wants that Islam rematch, which I don't blame him. But he said he might need surgery, so who knows if he's able to go out. You know, he said he's willing to bypass surgery to fight him in Abu Dhabi in October, which to be fair, there's not really a lot of options for Islam because Charles says he's not ready for October. And also, Gaethje Poirier, knowing their fight, they're probably going to beat the crap out of each other. They're not going to make it for October. So, I mean, they really left. I mean, Volkanovski might get that fight with Islam, that rematch. Islam have no choice but to do the rematch with him. But personally, I think Volkanovski should take on Ilya Topuria. Tell that once and for all, because that's the only challenger left for Ilya. I mean, for Volkanovski, excuse me, is Ilya Topuria, because there's really no one else for Volkanovski in that featherweight division. He's the only guy left that's made a surge who has a name, who's deserving a title fight after what he did to Josh Emmett. And those two guys have been talking a lot of trash about each other. Volkanovski's been basically dismissing him as a fighter. Yeah, Taboria's basically talking trash, believing that he can beat him. Full confidence, but also talking trash about him. And you saw after the fights, you with Volkanovski and Taboria getting face-to-face, talking trash about each other. Even afterwards, they're still talking trash to each other. So I want to see that fight. If Volkanovski can make the end of the... let's say he gets the surgery and it's not too bad, and maybe he can come back in December or maybe January. I like to see those two fight there. That, especially considering Taboria is undefeated as well. See Volk take his undefeated streak. I mean, that'd be to see if he can do it and see if Taboria can be the one dethrone Volkanovski. I mean, that's sign me up. I'm excited. I mean, how do you not get excited for that? And for Yair, I mean, sucks for Yair. And it was really a bad night for Mexican MMA because a lot of the big Mexican fighters lost, which I'll talk about one of them next, but. Maybe Yair Holloway rematch. If once Holloway beats Zombie, which I think he will, you could do that. Maybe running back with him Ortega, because Ortega hasn't fought since last year. And that fight ended, with injury. Maybe they want to run that back in a couple months and have them settle that fight. I'm just trying, I'm just thinking options for Yair, who to fight next, considering he's lost the title fights. I'm thinking maybe Holloway rematch or Ortega rematch. Those are two options that come to my mind, but yeah, I mean, good fight, great performance. Good fight, great performance by Volkanovski. Guy's just best fighter in the world, man. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's crazy how much better this guy, how good Volkanovski is, and I'm just stunned. As we transition to that fight to the next fight in the card, which is in the flyweight division between Brandon Moreno and Alexander Pantoja, as Alexander Pantoja wins this fight via split decision, 49-46 on one judge's scorecard for Moreno, and the 48-47, I believe, for the other two judges' scorecards. Yeah, 48-47, okay. This was a very, very entertaining fight. Fight of year contender, in my opinion, arguably. I'm trying to think because there's not many fight of year contenders I can think of top of my head in the UFC right now. To me, this is one of them for sure. Because it was very entertaining back and forth. I mean, both guys had each other hurt, especially in that first round where Moreno got dropped by Pantoja. I mean, that was a clear round for Pantoja. And there were times where Pantoja had his back and had Moreno in trouble, but Moreno when Moreno did hurt Pantoja. I mean, if you saw Pantoja's face after the fights, and I think the day after, you could tell he was in a fight. Like, he got beat up. And they just brought it. Both guys just brought it to each other. And personally, I disagree with the judges. I thought Moreno won the fight 48-47 because my problem is, even though I mentioned Pantoja having taken Moreno's back and having some takedowns, you know, taking some takedowns, he didn't really do much with some of those takedowns. There were moments where Pantoja would take him down, but wouldn't go for a submission, never really had it close, didn't do a lot of ground and pound. And Moreno actually was winning the striking exchanges in some of those rounds. Particularly, to me, I think it comes down to round three, in my opinion. Now, if I watch the fight again, I have a different opinion, but I feel like round three is really the round that's really the tough round to judge, or the controversial round, because round one was clearly Pantoja. Round five, you can Pantoja, because Moreno did well, but he didn't do enough to solidify that fifth round, especially with striking. And then Moreno won to me round four and round two. So it really is the third round is what he comes down to in terms of who he thought won that fight. And for me, I thought Moreno did enough to win, because I feel like Moreno, you know, did more damage than Pantoja, did more. Pantoja doing at times didn't do anything with those takedowns. And did enough to negate the damage Moreno did on the feet. That's just me. I mean, you may disagree with me, that's fine. I personally think the wrong guy won. Moreno should be the champ right now, but congratulations to Alexander Pantoja for the victory. I mean, Pantoja definitely showed that in the ground. He definitely has an advantage there. And that he's a good striker. And then also, he can also, you know, hurt Moreno too. I mean, he dropped him, like I said, in the first round. So, round fighter, which most flyweights are. You have to be round-rounded to be a great flyweight for the most part. And both guys definitely have good cardio, which makes sense. You should have good cardio for a flyweight. I think both guys should do the rematch personally, because my thing is, I know Amir Abazi is technically on the win streak, but let's be honest, Amir Abazi did not beat Kai Kara France in his last fight. That was a terrible, terrible judging decision there. I can't get behind Amir Abazi fighting Pantoja for the world title. And Brandon Royval, I know is a name out there, but the problem is Royval just got beat by Pantoja not that long ago, if I'm mistaken. So it's like, do you really want to see that again? And plus, I think he got finished too by Pantoja, if I'm mistaken. So I think, you know, I think maybe those two should fight each other on a more contender fight. You could probably do Moreno and Pantoja the rematch, because that's a fight that gets people excited. That's an exciting fight that people want to see a rematch with. The two big names. I mean, Royval and Pantoja and Amir Abazi and Pantoja doesn't really bring the excitement that Moreno and Pantoja 4 does, especially after that great fight. You know, technically Moreno is 0-3 against him, because the Ultimate Fighter fight did not count, but he lost in the Ultimate Fighter. But he lost the Ultimate Fighter by submission, I believe, and then he got dominated in the second fight, you know, back in 2018. Here, this fight was competitive, where you can make an argument that he won. In my opinion, he won the fight. So Moreno is closing the gap between him and Pantoja. So who knows? Maybe the fourth fight he beats Pantoja finally. Kind of like Israel Adesanya and Alex Pereira, where Israel was 0-3 against Alex Pereira before the fourth fight, where he finally knocked him out back in April. So I feel like that this could happen, where Moreno finally beats Pantoja and gets that monkey off his back. But yeah, I mean, great fight. Fight your contender, entertaining back and forth. And congratulations to Pantoja. I mean, it's an emotional moment for him, considering this guy was an Uber Eats driver as a part-time for 2 years ago. Now he's the champ. And, you know, his family was there. You saw the Brazilians in the crowd getting all excited. I mean, Charles Oliveira and Gilbert Burns were super excited seeing him as the champ. I mean, I'm pretty sure somewhere Amanda Nunes was probably jumping up and down, considering when she retired, she basically wanted the Brazilian fighters, especially the men, to get their shit together to start winning championships. And not just the men, but I think Brazilian women too. But I don't know. Sometimes I'm thinking she said the men, but I think she might. But I think she said both men and women to get their shit together and start winning championships. Considering she was the only Brazilian with a belt. Now Pantoja's got a belt, so I'm pretty sure she's somewhere happy right now, especially her former teammate. So yeah, great moment for Pantoja. Congratulations to him, world champ. As we transition to that fight to the next fight in the card, do want to show a little bit of a little collage here, this picture of the card, of the pay-per-view card, before we talk about Dricus du Plessis and Robert Whittaker. I meant to show it earlier, but for some reason I forgot. I see Moreno, you know, with Pantolin's back, Volkanovski finishing Yair, Dricus du Plessis after his victory. It is victory, and Lawler and Nico Price, which we'll definitely talk about. Dricus du Plessis gets the second round TKO victory over Robert Whittaker. And this shocked me, because I thought Robert Whittaker was going to beat Dricus du Plessis. I mean, he was a favorite for a reason. I didn't think Dricus was good enough or skill enough to beat Robert Whittaker, considering how talented and how good Robert Whittaker has been since he's moved up to middleweights. And he's still one of the best fighters in the world. In the first round, it looked like Robert Whittaker was just gonna school him badly. I mean, he did a great job with Dricus du Plessis, just picking him apart on the feet, getting in and out, just give him trouble the whole that entire first round. You know, there was a moment where Dricus did get him and did go for like a judo takedown, but which he somewhat got, but he kind of slept, and Robert Whittaker was able to reverse position and I believe get up, if I'm mistaken. I remember du Plessis didn't really do anything much with that takedown at all. And in the second round, Whittaker was doing well, but Dricus, man, that guy's got power. That's the one thing we learned in his fights, from the Till fight to the Brunson fight, and even his other fights before those fights. He's got power, man. That guy's a strong boy. I don't know if they in South Africa, they eat something that makes them strong. I don't know if it's just the in South Africa, or maybe just his genetics, but that dude is strong. That's one strong dude. He just caught Whittaker and hurt him badly. And it's weird because when he hurt Whittaker stumbled. But Dricus like kind of like did this, turn around, almost like he was expecting Whittaker to do something. But once he saw Whittaker was hurt, he went for the finish. He was able to finish him. And that shocked me. Shocked Dan when we were doing the live stream. And shocked my brother, which I think at that point, my brother was joining us for the live stream at that point, if I'm mistaken. But, man, he finishes Robert Whittaker. Whittaker has only been finished by Israel Adesanya in the middleweight division. No, I think he's only only Israel in the middleweight division. I think he's only been finished another time before that, which was by Wonderboy. For some reason, I thought Israel was the only guy to finish him, but then I remember Wonderboy did finish him when Whittaker was a welterweight. So he's the third guy to finish Robert Whittaker. Not many guys can say that. Whittaker, and this is after he lost the first round. Whittaker was looking good too. And du Plessis, man, good congratulations to him. The guy's won six in a row in the UFC. He's 22, and now he's getting what he wants—a title fight with Israel Adesanya. And as a lot of you know, these two had a confrontation after the fight where Israel got in his face and was talking a lot of shit to him, saying all kinds of shit to him. And as you can see, the picture here of Israel and du Plessis. I mean, Israel kind of made it personal. Was basically making a ratio. In my opinion, he was making a ratio when he really shouldn't have. I mean, Israel's taking du Plessis' comments way out of line. I mean, du Plessis, for those of you who don't know, du Plessis before his fight there, Brunson said he's going to be the first true African champion, as someone who's born in Africa, trains in Africa, and lives in Africa, to bring a belt to the UFC. Yes, I know Ngannou, Usman, and then Israel, all champions, but those guys didn't live in Africa when they were champions. Those guys, you know, Usman and Ngannou lived in America, and then New Zealand is where Israel lives, so those belts went to those places. And du Plessis saying, look, I want to be a fighter who fights in Africa, who still lives in Africa, to bring a belt, to win a belt, which, nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's fair points. But then Israel just got super offended and started calling him all kinds of racial slurs and just saying all kinds of shit about him, and Kamaru Usman with dumb comments about saying how du Plessis basically isn't a true African because he's white. I mean, that's what he basically said, Usman. And both guys just saying like dumb comments and stuff. And so the MMA media has done a terrible job with this. They have gone out there and basically trying to make it seem like du Plessis was saying some racial stuff when he wasn't. There was nothing racial about what he said. Like, at all. He was just pointing out how he's African, born raised in Africa, still live in Africa, and he's going to bring a belt to Africa, which, nothing wrong with that. It's just facts, no matter what. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, there was nothing racial about that, and if for people to try and make it racial when it's not, it's just shameful on their part. It's disgraceful. and it's really terrible. There's not a ratio about the plus, he said. And Israel making a ratio is just very immature and very childish and very stupid in his parts. But yeah, I can't wait to see that fight, especially this personal tension. And I mean, that's gonna be a good fight. Even though Israel is the favorite and Israel probably will win, but you cannot count Duplessis and his power in his hands, and he's a strong guy. If he gets a hold of you, he can take you down. I mean, look at he took Darren Till down easily. Now, if you remember, Darren Till's takedown defense has been the best in his recent fights, but still, he did a decent job against Derek Brunson, if I remember, and Brunson's got good wrestling. You know, I mean, some say Brunson's older, but Brunson's still a good wrestler. I mean, if he gets a hold of you, he can take you down with ease. Brunson's still a top 10 freaking middleweight in the world. But yeah, I can't wait to see that fight with Israel and Duplessis. And Duplessis got a chance, a better chance than you think, especially after seeing what he did to Robert Whittaker. But yeah, I can't wait to see that fight. I mean, that probably be in September if Duplessis is not injured. You know, I don't think it should be that quickly because it's not fair to Duplessis, but still. Who knows? It'd be interesting to see if Israel fights out, you know, non-composed, considering he really wants to beat up Duplessis for his comments, which I don't understand, but hey, I guess that's Israel for you. Anyway, we transition from that fight to the next fight in the card, which is in the lightweight division, Dan Hooker and Jalen Turner, as Dan Hooker wins the fight via split decision, which I didn't understand at all how this was a split decision. To me, this was an easy Dan Hooker victory, 29-28. I mean, you see Dan Hooker after the fight with blood in his hair, as he dyed his hair blonde, and his hair is basically like reddish pink. But Hooker said that's what he wanted, and he got it. As Jalen Turner won the first round, had Hooker in trouble and had him hurt during the fight, especially in that first round, and to me, easily won that first round. Then early in the second round, he was doing well. He had Hooker cut up near his eyebrow. I believe it was his left eyebrow. Had a pretty bad cut. And Hooker was bleeding all that. But in that second round, Hooker was able to make an adjustment and hurt Turner badly. Hurt him badly, and Hooker just was going for it. And even had Jalen Turner on the ground, and Turner was they ate some shots on the ground, some ground and pound. And my co-host Dan said it best during the live stream. Jalen Turner looked like he was just trying to survive. It looked like he was just trying to survive and not get finished during that exchange, and especially in the third round after Hooker hurt him, to where it looked like Turner was just like trying to hold on, just trying not get finished, and instead of actually trying to go for the win, Hooker did hurt him badly. I thought at one point Jalen Turner might get finished. That's what I thought in my head, but obviously it didn't happen. And then Hooker was able to get the nice victory, considering at one point it looked like Hooker was done. Some of us thought that after that Arnold Allen loss, even though he went to featherweight when he should have never gone to featherweight. I mean, he's not a featherweight. He's a lightweight. Arguably, he could be a welterweight. I've always said that Hooker should try welterweight just to see, considering how big he is. I think he'll have success at welterweight, in my opinion, but that's just me. But, And the thing about Dan Hooker that makes this fight more impressive for him in his victory is the fact that this guy won a fight with broken orbital bone, as I showed you the image that he took of his x-ray of the broken orbital bone. As if it comes up, you should be able to see if you look at his orange cheek. Yep, there's a little red circle that shows where the orbital bone's broken. The guy had a... Jalen Turner did do some damage to Dan Hooker. Not only did it bust him up, but also broke his orbital bone. That shows you how good Turner was doing in the first half of the fight, really. Until Hooker called him and hurt him. And then afterwards, you know, like I said, Turner really didn't do much. He was just in survival mode. And then also, Dan Hooker had a broken arm or a broken wrist, too. So not only did Dan Hooker win the fight with a broken orbital bone, he won with a broken freaking wrist. Hopefully the image can pop up so you guys can see the x-ray of his broken wrist. As you can see, right, you can see like there's like a line near his wrist area, which you'd be able to tell where it's broken. You should be able to tell. And yeah, I mean, this is crazy. This guy fucking fought a 15-minute fight with broken wrist and a broken arm, it looks like. I don't know if that's the wrist. Maybe more of a broken arm. Now I think about it, but still a broken arm and a broken orbital bone, and beat and won against a top 10 or top 15 freaking lightweights, Jalen Turner. you know, Turner should not be a lightweight, should be a welterweight, maybe middleweight. He's freaking cutting way too much weight, but we all freaking weight bully, but that's besides the point. The fact he was able to win a fight despite losing the first round, having all those having his body get damaged like that and still win, that is freaking impressive as all fuck, man. You gotta tip your hat to freaking Dan Hooker. I mean, if you know Dan Hooker, you know the guy's a tough warrior. I mean, look at his fight with Edson Barboza, where he got beat up badly, and yet survived as long as he did, which is crazy considering the beating Barboza gave him. The war he had with Paul Felder, which he won that fight. You know, some thought Felder won. He had that crazy war with Felder, entertaining fight. Had that war with Dustin Poirier, where he hurt Poirier, almost finished in like about the second round, if I'm mistaken. I mean, Dan Hooker is one tough dude. Dan Hooker's not a guy who's gonna quit. You have to like really hurt him. Like you have to make the refs stop the fight or really knock him out to really hurt Dan Hooker, because Dan Hooker is not gonna go away easy. He's one tough dude, one tough Kiwi man. And Hooker's now on a 2-fight win streak after winning his last fight back in November against Claudio Pellis. And now it's interesting to see where Dan Hooker, what's next with Dan Hooker. Who does he fight next? He probably come back around maybe like next year for sure. I don't think he's gonna come back this year. Maybe around springtime next year. Maybe. Who knows how long it's gonna take for his body to heal up and train again properly. And sorry about that, my dog. Sorry about the camera shaking. My dog was nearby, and kind of like rocked the table that's holding my laptop. But I mean, he probably come back around springtime, etc. And I can't wait to see what's next with Hooker. He's on a 2-fight win streak. So we all thought, some thought Hooker was done. Some of us did. But Hooker's proven that he ain't done yet. He's still got some, just may have one more run in him. Who knows what he does next, who he fights next, how far he goes. But I'm interested to see. Dan Hooker's always exciting, always brings it. And I love seeing Dan Hooker fight. Can't wait to see what's next for him. Give me one moment. Let me just take care of this real quick. Just give me like a couple seconds. And then I'll break down the Bo Nickel fight. Give me one moment. Hang on. Sorry about that, folks. I'm back. Sorry about that, folks. Sorry about that. My dog had to be let out as my dog was in the room while my door was closed. I opened the door for him. But anyway, let's talk about Bo Nickel. Bo Nickel gets the first round KO of Val Woodburn. I mean, it was a minute into the first round? Like, that fight did not last long at all. Bo Nickel going into this fight was the biggest favorite, moneyline favorite in UFC history. I mean, the odds for him to win were crazy. I showed you a picture of Bo Nickel, you know, after he landed that knockout punch on Val Woodburn. I mean, look at that image. I mean, look at Woodburn, the way his body is. I mean, ooh. I mean, it was 38 seconds in the first round. Okay, it was quicker than I thought. And it was a quick fight, but I didn't know it was that quick. I mean, he knocked him silly. I mean, Bo Nickel went for a takedown. Didn't get it, but... Wait, did I say 38 seconds? My bad. I must have missed. Sorry. I read a ticker, and the ticker said 38 seconds. I thought that was Robbie Lawler and Nico Price in the fight. I don't know. That was the Woodburn and Bo Nickel fight. My apologies there. But anyway, yeah, I mean, he went for a takedown. Didn't get it necessarily, but it didn't matter because I feel like he might have done that intentionally just to get Woodburn just so focused on the takedown threat that he forgot that Bo Nickel got hands. I'm so worried about the takedown that it left an opening for him to just catch Val Woodburn and just knock him silly. I mean, he knocked him out badly. I mean, I know it was a TKO, but damn, Bo Nickel. The reason why Bo Nickel is such a highly touted prospect, not only because how good he was as a wrestler in collegiate wrestling, amateur wrestling, but the guy's got power in his hands. I mean, we've seen several fights where he can knock dudes out, this is someone who's got good striking for a guy at his level of MMA, and he's only going to get better the more he trains, obviously. So, I mean, he's going to get much better as a striker, and a guy who can strike the way, you know, good striking and with great wrestling is a dangerous fighter in his middleweight division, any division, period. And for Val Woodburn, I hope the UFC gives him another shot. Gives him another fight, considering he took this fight on week's notice. I mean, the guy, he knew he was already training for a fight in August, but still, he had to go from preparing for a fight in August to fighting the next week against someone, Bo Nickel. I mean, I hope he gets another crack at the UFC against somebody just to see what he's like, because the guy helped save this fight and did the company a big favor and hopefully he gets another crack. He deserves it, another crack at the UFC. I mean, gotta give him credit there. And Bo Nickel, give him credit. I mean, this guy was probably the best opponent he fought in terms of record-wise. I mean, the guy was 7-0 going into this fight. I just finished him in 38 seconds. So I was right. It was 38 seconds. My bad. I thought I was wrong. I thought I misread that. I thought I confused the Robbie Lawler and Nico Price fight with this fight in terms of the time fights lasted. But both fights were 38 seconds. So I was right. Anyway, yeah, congratulations, Bo Nickel. Great victory. I'm trying to say, what's next for Bo? I was to give him at least like one or two more unranked opponents, and if he beats them easily, then you give him a ranked opponent. You don't need to rush Bo Nickel. Take your time with him. He's still young. I mean, the guy's what, 26, 27? I mean, why do we have to rush Bo Nickel for? Let him build his name up so that way he can grow more and more popularity, and that way he can develop as a fighter, and maybe he can one day be a title contender, which I think he will personally. I think he will, but still. You don't need to fast track him. Build him up slowly, so that way he can definitely be a legit title contender by the midpoint next year or by end of next year. Depends how often he fights. I do think he will fight one more time. That's just my opinion. We'll see. I mean, Bo Nickel, the guy is a highly talented prospect for a reason. As well as transition to, I just want to talk the prelims. The prelims were very entertaining for the most part. A lot of good fights, a lot of finishes. I mean, Denise Gomes beating Yasmin Haugue shocked the crap out of me. That was shocking. Because Yasmin Haugue, I was very high on her. I thought she was going to be undefeated and get to the rankings as an undefeated fighter. And Desmond Gomes just finished her easily. 20 seconds. Ouch. That shocked me completely. I mean, I'm still stunned by that. I mean, someone said Yasmin Haugue might have been the best prospect in women's MMA in the UFC, or in the UFC at least. Maybe not women's MMA, but in the UFC. And I agree with that statement. I think she might have been the best women's prospect in all of MMA. And she got finished like that. I mean, I'm still shocked, stunned by that. And that was basically the trend of a bad night for Mexican MMA. As she lost, she lost by knockout. Tassio Tyra beat it on Chavez by unanimous decision. It wasn't the most entertaining fight, but still, Chavez couldn't do nothing with the ground game. And of course, Yair and Brandon Moreno losing. It was a big night for Mexican MMA, considering there were a lot of Mexican fighters on the card, two Mexicans fighting for belts. Crowd was mostly Mexican, which makes sense. Plus, they're in Nevada, which has a lot of Mexicans, which is near Mexico itself, Nevada, eventually Vegas. But it did not, unfortunately for the Mexican fans, it did not go as they wanted. Unfortunately, but still, I mean, the fact that there's so many Mexican fighters on this card to fight for a title, and you have Yasmin Yagui, who was a prospect who I still think can be a great fighter. We'll see how she reacts to getting knocked out and loses for the first time. But if she's able to not let it affect her too much and just go out there and improve her striking defense and maybe work on her game, I think she'll bounce back. I think this will be just a loss, and she'll definitely be a girl who by the end of next year probably ranked. I still believe that at the end of next year she'll be ranked in the strawweight division. I'm still high on her despite the loss. And you also had Edgar Chavez fighting against Tassio Tyra in the fight division, who's a guy who was 3-0 before this fight, who I think is probably the best prospect in flyweight, despite not having the best performance this past Saturday. But his previous performances were pretty impressive. I do think Tetsuo Taira would definitely be a guy who will definitely be ranked in the flyweight division by this point next year. And then, of course, you have Yair and Moreno fighting for belts, and Moreno being champion. Still, big MMA's come a long way, is what I'm trying to say. and you get, and that's very impressive. This is something. It made sense that eventually Mexican MMA was going to catch up and become Mexico to become a player in mixed martial arts as they are in boxing. I mean, you think of boxing, you think of Mexico, and I think soon when you think of MMA, you're going to think of America, Brazil, Russia, and Mexico. Just me personally, but yeah, it wasn't all bad for Mexico though. There was a Mexican fighter who had, in my opinion, one of the most impressive performances in all the pay-per-view. We're talking about prelims and main card. Jesus Aguilar, this man knocked out his opponent. I forget his name. I think it was Shannon Ross, I believe it was. This man knocked him out in 17 seconds with one punch. This man was like Saitama from One Punch Man, from anime fans out there. I mean, look at that. I mean, the guy landed an overhand right, knocked him silly. And give him credit, because he could have landed some ground and pound afterwards because the ref didn't stop him, but he knew his opponent was out and just walked away. Like Mark Hunt, when he used to do the walk-off knockout, that's what he did. I mean, look at that image right there. I mean, this guy is knocked to the next world, to the shadow realms, they say. Shannon Ross, I mean, my goodness, wow. I think he got a performance bonus. I believe so. I mean, he should anyway. I mean, how the fuck do you not give him a performance bonus out of that knockout? I mean, my goodness. Jesus Aguilar, wow. Wow, wow. I couldn't believe it. I was watching it and I saw that. I was stunned. I was lost for words seeing him knock out Shannon Ross that quickly, one punch. Like I said, like he's Saitama from fucking One Punch Man. It's just, wow. I can't wait to see him fight next. I mean, who knows? I don't know if that's just who he is, Jesus Aguilar, or maybe he's just landing the perfect punch on Shannon Ross. But I want to see him fight next. I can't wait to see his next fights. I'm definitely the one I'm interested for sure, just to see if maybe this guy is the next. It's a Mexican Davison Figueiredo, because that's the only guy I could think of flyweight who has that one punch knockout like that. Is Davison Figueiredo, and he's going up to bantamweight to fight Dominic Cruz. So it looks like his flyweight days are over. But man, oh man, what a knockout. But the big story of the prelims, and one of the big stories of the card, is the retirement of Robbie Lawler. A true legend in the sports. This is a guy who was a former UFC welterweight champion. Guy had three consecutive fight a year with Johnny Hendricks back in 2014, Rory McDonald in 2015, and then Carlos Condit in 2016. And that's crazy. He had at least two back to back fight of the year in his back to back fights, because he fought Rory back in July 2015, and January 2016 he fought Carlos Condit. And remember, 2016 he had Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz too, which was an excellent fight, but that Condit fight was so damn good. It was too good. That's how good it was that any other year Nate Diaz and McGregor would win with one fight a year. But that fight was so damn good between him and Condit that you had no choice but to give that fight of the year. And thank you, Robbie Lawler, for all the great fights and memories. Thank you for all the impressive, all the great fights. I mean, the second Hendricks fight was pretty impressive, considering you lost to Hendricks in the first fight they had, then early in the year. Then Lawler won two fights between that time, then fought in December, and was able to beat Hendricks and take the belt from him after losing to Hendricks, in the first fight earlier in that year for the welterweight title. And Robbie Lawler at one point was known as fifth. There was a saying that the fifth round Robbie Lawler was going to destroy people, because in the fifth round of the second Hendricks fight, the Matt Brown fight before that, the Rory McDonald fight, the Carlos Condit fights, he just went hard and just beat up those guys and just beat them up badly. You can make an argument those guys were never the same after those fights. You know, Matt Brown, Hendricks, McDonald, and Condit. For sure, Condit was never the same. And Rory McDonald, you could definitely say, was never the same, even though he wouldn't have success after the fight, but he was a different fighter. Anyway, let's talk about the fight he had. He did have a fight in the prelims, as he knocks out Nico Price in 38 seconds of the first round. I mean, this was shocking. I did not expect Robert Lawler to get a quick knockout against Nico Price. I was afraid Nico's going to knock him out. But thankfully for Robbie Lawler and for Robbie Lawler fans, that wasn't the case, as he got the 38-second knockout. I mean, he basically got in a clinch and just landed some hooks, some lefts and rights, I believe. Might have been some rights. I know he lands a couple uppercuts, and that's what I believe is the uppercut, or maybe one of the hooks that knocked Nico Price out. And it was shocking because, like I said, I don't think anyone expected it, a 30-second knockout for Robbie Lawler as he got the first round TKO victory over Nico Price. It says TKO, not knockout, but you can make an argument it should be a knockout. Anyway, that's besides the point. Robbie Lawler gets the victory in his retirement fight as Robbie Lawler was emotional going into the fight. You could, and the commentary team mentioned how emotional he was when they did the fighters meeting with the commentary team. And then going into the fight, you could tell it was hitting him home that this was it. And then, as you see here, he is emotional in this picture. And then, of course, this other picture where he's kneeling down, he got emotional. And Robbie Lawler has always been a more stoic guy. He's never been a guy who's gotten emotional at all during his fights. Like, you really see emotions. But this fight, he couldn't hide it, which makes sense. This is his last fight. He's probably thinking back all the things he went through his journey, starting fighting one 2000, I believe. Yeah, 2000, made UFC in 2002. Then got cut. Then fought in Pride. Did well in DXC. Fought in Strikeforce, where his Strikeforce run wasn't the best. He had some good moments, but it wasn't like he was dominating Strikeforce. And then the UFC came back and just went on his legendary run, became welterweight champ, had defended the belt twice, and became a Hall of Fame legend. And this is a real legend. Some guys get called legends sometimes when they really don't deserve it. But Robbie Lawler is a legitimate legend, all-time great, one of the greatest welterweights of all time, one of the greatest fighters of all time. And, man, if you haven't seen the Roy McDonald-Carlos Condit fights, please watch those fights. Because they are some of the greatest fights you'll ever see. Especially what he did in the fifth round of both fights. I mean, man. Crazy. Thank you, Robbie Lawler, for all the great memories and all the great fights. And thank you, UFC, for doing that amazing tribute video to Robbie Lawler. Because that was that was just awesome. Robbie Lawler has one of the greatest retirements in MMA history. It's up there with George St. Pierre, Habib, and Amanda Nunes. You make an argument that GSP might have the better retirement. Well, actually, no. Actually, GSP and Habib might have the two best retirements in MMA history. Robbie Lawler might be number three behind those two because those guys won championship fights and retired and they also got finishes too, but it was for championship fights. Nunes is up there too. She defended her belt, but I think Lawler getting the finishes might put a notch above Amanda Nunes in my opinion. But those are like the four best retirements in MMA history. Usually legends, when they retire, they retire knocked out, submitted, or just getting dominated. They really go on top. So, yeah, awesome moment, man. Definitely great moment. It was, if you're an MMA fan, how can you not enjoy that moment? It was awesome. Congratulations, Robbie Lawler. Thank you for all the great fights and memories. You are one of the most entertaining, great fighters in UFC history, in MMA history. You are an all-time great. Thank you. Hall of Famer for sure. MMA Hall of Famer, UFC Hall of Famer for sure. That's not even a debate. Man, 290, what a great card. What a fun card this was. Awesome. Card of the year so far. It led up to the hype that I had for it, and I'm so happy it did. It was excellent, man. I loved this card. So awesome. As it transitions from that card to this upcoming card between Holly Holm and Maria Bueno Silva in the bantamweight division. The card starts at 10 p.m. Eastern. 7 p.m. Pacific. Main card is on ESPN. Maria Bueno Silva and Holly Holm. A point fight in the bantamweight division, women's bantamweight division, as both women are both in the top 10. I believe Bueno Silva is number 10. Holly Holm is number 3 in the division. I mean, I'm not sure the poster says it, but if I remember correctly, I remember seeing that. I remember one of the other posters showing the rankings. I believe that's what it was. Either way, winning this fight, to me, should fight Julia Pena for the vacant bantamweight title. So now that Amanda Nunes is retired, who else is Julia Pena going to fight for that vacant title? Because it seems like Pena is next. Because considering she was just a champ before losing the belt to Amanda Nunes, and she needs to fight someone on a win streak. So Holly Holm is, I believe, on a 2-fight win streak. I know Bueno Silva's on a 3-fight win streak. Let me just check Colin Holmes win streak real quick. Give me one moment. As my computer loads, I don't know why it's being slow right now. Sorry about that, but this fight, I mean, Holly Holm is the better striker than Bueno Silva. Well, Silva is more of a grappler. A lot of her victories are by submissions, not by striking. And Holly Holm, we all know her pedigree of striking, former world champion boxer. Great kickboxing too. You know, Holly Holm's recent fights has just been more about just getting a hold of her opponents and just clinching them. And just clinching them and against the cage and just throwing, you know, knee strikes and certain strikes, not really doing a lot of damage. It's worked, but at the same time, it's not the most fun, exciting fight style to watch either, unfortunately. But she's still winning. You know, I wish Holly Holm would use her striking more, because I don't know why she hasn't used it as much, considering she's better than most women at striking. I mean, who knows? Holly Holm might make it a kickboxing or boxing fight against Bueno Silva, considering Bueno Silva does have, I believe, like a bunch of submissions. I forget how many she has. I think she has like 10, I want to say. Not 10, but like 8. Oh, I was wrong. My bad. I was wrong. Holly Holm's on a 1-fight win streak. I thought she was on a 2-fight win streak, but I forgot she lost to Kaylin Vieira. That's right. Everyone thought she won. And though I thought Vieira got the right. Vieira definitely deserved to win because Holly Holm didn't do much damage. She's come out with a victory over Yana Santos and back in March. And give credit to Holly Holm making a somewhat quick turnaround fighting in July, considering Holly Holm, for some reason, recently has been taking long layoffs where she takes 8-9 months off, a year off, etc. She's making a quick turnaround, which means she must be healthy. And maybe she recognizes, look, she is older. She's in her early 40s. She knows that her window is definitely closing in terms of being a title contender or a top-tier MMA athlete. And Mayra Belousova, she could be Holly Holm, a former bantamweight champion. Especially if she submit her or get a decision over her. It's easily the biggest victory of her career. It'll do wonders for her career. As she basically can get that title fight against Julian Pena. I mean, the winner of this fight should get Julian Pena next for the bantamweight title. There's no point of Julian Pena fighting someone else in this division. Let's just be honest. I mean, who else is she going to fight? Unless Aaron Blanchfield does go up in 135 and fights for the vacant belt. I mean, if she does that, then yeah, that makes sense. I don't know if she will. I mean, Aaron Blanchfield might just sit and wait to see what happens with Grasso and Shevchenko for their time in the rematch back in September. And though, for some reason, my mind's telling me that it looks like her and Talia Santos might be fighting again. I mean, not fighting again, but might be booked again. They might actually fight on the air. I can't remember. I don't remember. Let me know if I'm wrong, right or wrong about the Santos and Blanchfield, them looking at fight again. As they're supposed to fight, but Santos that pull out. Anyway, I'm just checking Mayra Belousova's records just to see how many submissions she's got, because I know she has a lot of submissions. Okay, she got 7 submissions, so 7 of her 10 victories are by submission. I knew she had a bunch of submissions, I just didn't know how many submissions. So, Holly Holm, I'll make it a stand-up fight. Don't do what you've been doing recently in your fights where you try and clinch and just do a lot of clinch work and, you know, try one there. I know, you know, you're a strong woman. Still, this is not the woman to do that with. You're a legendary kickboxer. I mean, not kickboxer, boxer who's got some kickboxing skills as well. Use your striking and make it a striking fight. That's how you're going to me, if you do that, that's how you'll beat Bruno Silva. If you're Mario Bruno Silva, you got to take her to the ground. I know this is like obvious, you know, talking points like, duh. But still, I'm just pointing out the truth. That's what it is. It is that simple with this fight coming up. Mayra Belousova, you need to somehow get this fight to the ground. You need to, like, you know, hopefully you've been working on your striking. Hopefully you can use your strike to catch Holly Holm off guard to where she's so stunned by your striking that you see yourself open to get taken down. From there, you could do damage. I mean, not damage, but you can take her to the ground and, like, get the submission victory, because you clearly have a huge advantage in the ground game over Holly Holm, as Holly Holm has no submission victories. Anyway, we should see what's next. We should see what happens this Saturday. And see, like, who wins this fight, whether it be a decision or someone gets a finish. I feel like if it's going to be a finish, I can see this fight ending a finish, personally. Like, for some reason, I have that weird feeling, even though I shouldn't expect a finish. But if it does end a finish, it's probably going to be Bueno Silva gets the finish due submission. And And as we go from there, I just want to mention briefly, co-main event, Albert Durov versus Jung Young Park. And you got Will Harris supposed to be on this card, but that fight got scrapped. You had Norman Dumont against Jesse Handler in the featherweight division, which, why is there a featherweight division? There's really no point of it. It's like, why? They don't have enough women to do rankings. I mean, that division shouldn't exist. Now that Amanda Nunes retired, just get rid of it. I'm sorry. I know some women fans will be mad at me if they hear me say that, but this is how I feel. There's no point in that division in the UFC. Cyborg's not there. Nunes is not there. What are you going to do? Jack Del Molina's on this card. I'm happy he's on this card. Jack Del Molina's one of the most exciting welterweight prospect in the UFC. I mean, UFC's got him and Ian Gary, both guys who are ranked now. Two young welterweight prospects. I mean, Shavkat Rachmanov is. I mean, he's not. I can't call him a prospect anymore after beating Jeff Neal. So he's a legit contender now. You know, you can argue he was after beating Neil Magny. Shavkat was, but still, Jack Del Molina was supposed to fight last weekend against Sean Brady, but Brady pulled out due to a weird infection in his elbow. And then he was supposed to fight someone else. I forget his name. I think it was Josiah Horro was his name. I think Horro was his last name. But Horro had a weird brain issue that basically the MRI basically saved his life. And yeah, pulled out obviously to do the brain issue. I mean, thank God they caught that in time. Because imagine if you had fought Jack Del Molina with that. Ooh, that could have been really bad for him. And bad probably for the UFC if some guy with brain issue fought and had severe damage. And plus, Jack Del Molina, who knows what that would have done to him mentally if something bad would happen to him after beating him up. So, I'm glad he's fighting. I'm glad he's got a fight considering he's from Australia. He traveled halfway across the world. And if he traveled halfway across the world, the world, and not gotten a fight, it would have been so shitty for him to travel there and not get a fight, to not make money and do what he does best, which is fighting. I mean, I'm happy he's got a fight, and he's able, you know, do his. I think he should win the fight. I mean, it's possible his opponent might catch him considering it's such a quick nose fight. But still, Jack's pretty damn good. There's a reason why people are high on him. He's ranked in the welterweight rankings, and I think he's a guy who'll be a top 10 fighter, obviously by the beginning of next year. And who knows? He might be top 5 by the end of next year. Maybe a guy who's in line for a championship fight end of next year. I think it's possible. Cannot rule out with Jack Del Molina. And I just realized they're going to Australia in September. Who knows? If Jack Del Molina gets an easy victory, he might do a quick turnaround fight in Australia where he's from. But the only problem is, who in the welterweight division is ready to fight in Australia in September that's ranked? Because Jack Del Molina should only get a ranked opponent next. He should not get anyone else that's not ranked. His next opponents should all be ranked. Maybe Sean Brady is able to get that infection healed up, maybe able to fight in September, maybe he can rebook that in September. Or I'm trying to think, who else in, I don't know, unless Neil Magny wants to fight in September and is able to do it, maybe if Jack gets a quick victory, Jack and Neil Magny. I don't know. Either way, I'll probably talk more about that next week and see after what happens with this card, but yeah, I mean, this card, I'm going to be honest with you, it's not the best card. It's really, card. I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, Terrence McKinney's coming back. I am interested to see how he does after getting knocked out badly by Ismael Bonifant. Ismael, last name skips my mind. Shit. I mean, he got knocked out brutally back in the January. You see how he's bounces back from that loss. Ahmed Azar is coming back after getting knocked out, suffering his first loss to Matt Revoa back in November. But this card is just, after that great card, UFC 290, this card is not the best. I'm going to be Q100. I'm still going to watch because it's fighting. Maybe we'll get a impressive knockout or a great submission. Maybe some guy make a name for himself. Plus, I do want to see Jack Del Molina fight, which, like I say, he's a ranked fighter. He's one of the best prospects in the welterweight division. I'm excited to see. I'm a fan of the guy. Can't wait to see. Either way, I'm going to watch. This card begins 10 p.m. Pacific, Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. I can't, you know, there are some things to look forward to. I look more forward to next week's card in London with Tom Aspinall, my boy, returning against Marcin Tybura, which I'll talk more about next week. You know, it's not exactly the most stacked London card, but still, it's a pretty good card. I'm excited for that. Can't wait for next week for London. But either way, thank you guys for watching and listening to this video and the channel where you're watching us on YouTube, Rumble, or listen to us on audio podcasting platforms, whether it be Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor FM, iHeart Podcasts, etc. Appreciate the love and support you guys give us. While you, this channel will be nothing. We appreciate the love and support you guys give us. And thank you guys for 10,000 subscribers. I think I mentioned it in my live stream, but if I didn't, thank you guys for all the subscribers. 10,000, that's crazy. My dad started this channel 2 years ago, and we already got 10,000 subscribers. I mean, here's to 10,000 more subscribers, and you guys are the best. Don't forget to leave a like and comment. Tell me what you thought was the best fight of 290. What you thought on the main event, Bueno Silva and Holly Holm. What you thought of Jack Del Molina. What do you think his ceiling is? And I'll see you guys next week. Have a good day. Good night. Word time watching this. And I'll see you next week. And peace.